This is a replay of the Wednesday night, September 2nd, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the best deal and good customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
James, 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, well, it'll be on mine too, particularly if it has absolutely no significance whatsoever. Although, to Tiger Woods, this one will have significance, but there's been a lot of talk because, of course, a last-minute plea deal. Originally, he was saying not guilty to a situation where I guess he finally saw the light and realized there was no way he was getting away with that. He's doing a plea deal on DUI after that accident earlier. And here's the deal, though. A lot of people are focusing on he loses his driver's license for 5 years. Well, it's a little more than that, actually. In fact, the judge is absolutely not ambiguous when he says, if you drive for any reason at all, you will be going back to jail. Now, what comes in here? Goodbye, PGA Tour. In California, golf carts are not considered motor vehicles. In Florida, they are, as far as that goes. But either way, the judge's admonition was pretty clear on the face of it. So what do we have with the PGA as far as that goes? The rules are, they're pretty black and white, but they are subject to exceptions. And maybe they'll make one for him. I don't know. But if you're looking at this year's Tour Champion Player Handbook, Golf Cart Rules and Guidelines, page 84, it says, during official rounds, the player must drive the cart to his tee shot on par and par fives, and then either the player or the caddy may drive the cart thereafter. On par threes, either the caddy or the player can drive. But there, in other words, so there's some of the course where it's mandated that the player do the driving. And of course, the judge is mandating that he do no such thing. So there are a number of other rules to consider in this, obviously, and guidelines can be altered, and whether they will or not, I don't know. The rules also encourage players to walk whenever possible, but given Tiger's difficulty walking due to numerous injuries, that's not really a choice. Now, if he ever opts to compete in the senior majors, he'll be forced to walk as carts are not allowed, unless a player has a severe and documented physical condition requiring them to be driven. So he could perhaps apply for an exception there, but not necessarily get one, and they must receive approval before they're allowed to use carts of any kind. So that's the deal, actually. What's happened here today is that the judge effectively put his golf career on hold for 5 years. Yeah, because you look at what he says, and you look at the PGA rules, and you look at the definition of a golf cart, and it's not going to be easy. All right, so enough of that. But yeah, when I first heard that, I said, wait a minute, and I looked it up and said, yeah, this doesn't look good. 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And I think he fell asleep toward the end of the show last night, or thought better of the whole deal and went to sleep. Victor in Silver Springs is back on WGN Radio.
Thank you for having me back.
Always.
Well, I had a lot of trouble on the AM band tonight. Somebody had a halogen light on and caused a lot of interference.
Where were they? Do you know? How close to
I have a sneaky suspicion it may be the neighbor across the street.
Oh, man.
So, anyhow, I remember back in the day, this was around a little after I got my Sea Crane radios in 2009. Okay. I became friends with the interference investigator at the power company, Pepco.
Oh, okay.
So I would call him and say, hey, I'm hearing this. And I would hold the phone over the radio speaker. He'd call me back in about an hour later. And he says, okay, I think I know where it is. Just let me know if it disappears. I'm over on Wayne Avenue, about six blocks from you.
Okay.
So he's got the cherry picker, and he says, looks like a couple of wires have crossed. So he uncrosses them, and I said, it's gone. The interference is gone.
Lucky
he says,
you.
Thank you very much. Let me know if there's any other things going on.
Lucky you. One of the big problems today, as you know, are these horrible smart meters. They can be done in a way that would be interference-free, but very few of the companies do it. And so, consequently, if you're at the wrong end of the street, it can play hell on radio reception.
Yes. I refused to get one, and I told the power company, you put one in, you better have the fire department on standby, because those things can catch fire.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Let's hope it doesn't. They'll be looking at you really hard. You know, the only place I know where they did it right was Chattanooga. When the EPB, the power board there, put in smart meters, they did absolutely no Wi-Fi. They wired fiber to every premise in Chattanooga. And since they did that, they thought, well, you know, we could offer them broadband, too. And that's how they became the Gig City. A symmetrical gig was really nice for everybody. But it is an amazing installation, and I know nowhere else that they've done it that well.
So there was another time I called Mike and I said, I'm hearing this on the AM band, and it was like a type of noise. And he called me back about 2 hours later, and he says, thanks for the call. Transformer, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
The transformer was getting ready to blow. You just saved your neighborhood a power outage.
Oh, well, good. That's always nice. Now, you talk about the power companies. The absolute worst was when they were trying BPL, broadband over power line. Oh, man, was this interference. It was unbelievable. I don't think anybody's doing it now, though. I don't know.
I don't know, but tonight somebody had the halogen light on. They turned it off just in time so I could hear your show.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. And you would think, well, if it's across the street or whatever, this wouldn't be a problem. Huh. Yeah, well, I'm glad.
Well, I did, my friend from the power company, he went across the street and told my neighbor, you know, that his light was causing interference, so he got rid of it.
Oh, good.
And then the next day, my neighbor came over and said, did you sick the DX police on me?
And no, the answer was no. You just wanted your problem corrected. You didn't care who was at fault.
That's what I told him, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he gave that lamp to somebody else.
Good.
But tonight, I don't know, somebody's got one of these halogen lights or whatever, and it was a buzz all over the AM band. Fortunately, WGN was coming in strong enough to overcome the interference.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. And hopefully they've gone to sleep for the night and won't be turning on the lights again anytime soon.
Yes. Well, anyway, I think Nick may be coming up, I hope.
Okay.
So I'll get off here and let somebody else get off.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
All Thank you.
All right, so there you have it. Yeah, man, if you're a DXer, the amount of interference that is on the AM band now is just almost unconscionable. But it drives you crazy when you hit one of those evenings where somebody's doing something that you wish they weren't. All right, so yeah, dimmer switches are not your friend either. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, well, we do have Nick, but not Nick in Baltimore, Nick in Chicago. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, there's another station where there's a Nick from Percival, Virginia. I think I'm going to move there so it'll be two from Percival, Virginia. I don't know. It sounds funny, doesn't it? I won't do that because I don't have the money. Yeah, I was going to mention that in the USA Today from August 31. I'll just give you like a couple of sentences. There's a good, big article about Dolly Parton with the Hannah Montana and Billy Ray Cyrus. But she was with some of the people involved with the production crew, and they asked her, Dolly says, was there anything at all that you need? And she said, darling, all I need is a toilet and a closet. I thought it was kind of cute.
Yeah.
That's country.
Yeah.
And another thing here on a serious side, also from USA Today, also August 31, about a Louisiana 8-year-old killed by an amoeba. It's a brain-eating, what they call brain-eating infection.
Yeah.
And what it is, to make it short, when people go in, first of all, many warm areas like in the South and in parts of Africa, Central America.
Or North Carolina, where that happened.
Yeah, well, yeah, anywhere where it's warm. Yeah. Long enough for all kinds of things to start breeding and growing and multiplying, and all, they're always around, you know. But it goes in through the nose when you go into this water, and then it goes to your brain. Now, they say here if it goes in, it can't infect people if swallowed and doesn't spread from person to person. Now, the reason it can't infect people when you swallow it, not that you should take a chance, doesn't say here, but I know that there are stomach acids that kill bad bacteria.
It's not only that. It's about the blood-brain barrier as far as that goes. But yeah, this is unfortunately known, and there are times when you hear a lot more about it. But it's basically an amoeba, but I think they call it meningoencephalitis. Is what it is.
Yeah, and, got that word there. I don't want to use a big word because it's late, and I don't want people
to
be awakened.
Well, it travels up the up the nose, obviously, and this is not new. And most of the time, it starts with severe headaches, though not always. But you're the North Carolina thing was just very recently, and the Louisiana thing was reported in Austin just earlier. So it exists, and when conditions are ripe, it can happen.
Yeah, they got another term for it besides what you mentioned. I'm looking at that term, N-A-E-G-L-E-R-A, Naegleria fowleri.
Well, that's the amoeba itself.
I see.
Yeah, Naegleria fowleri.
Yeah. And the other thing is the condition. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, you kind of look at the habitat of where does this, where does this thrive? And it's any warm aquatic environment.
Right.
And so the problem is that when you get it, the mortality rate's over 97%. So, you're not going to survive that. So you wind up with PAM.
Yeah.
And that's when I said meningoencephalitis. Yeah. They call it PAM, primary amoebic meningoencephalitis. But it's usually fresh water. In fact, I think it might always be fresh water. So a lake, a pond, mud puddles. The reality is it's not living in the water. It's living in the soil, the sediment and the silt at the bottom of the lakes or what have you. It usually doesn't happen in man-made systems. So people are saying, I'm not going in the swimming pool. Very unlikely. Very unlikely that it's going to be in your water supply or anything like that. But it will not live in salt water, from what I understand. So that also would be the case. It will not live in highly chlorinated swimming pools. So, the problem is that it's an e-ticket to the brain. If you get it through the nose, it just goes right up the olfactory nerve, and you know, that's goodbye. But like you say, you can't get it from drinking the water, for one thing.
Not drinking, but like if you're in a lake or
you swallow a bunch of water. No, it's not going to happen. So if you're in lakes or things like that, nose clips, they're your friends. As far as that goes, and you know, also avoid submerging your head, obviously. But
that's good too, because it also gets into your ears.
Well, sure.
The water.
I don't think that people should stop swimming by any means, but just be aware.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. People just have to be educated that they're in a big city area, also where you have Lake Michigan and all that. It seems all kind of peaceful and nice, but you know, like sometimes we have an overflow and big storms and several successive big storms of the sewer water being released into the lake because there's no place else to put it right now. Or deep tunnel project reservoirs are pretty full. So hey, listen, I'm gonna ask you for a song. You don't have to, you know, do this particular song, but you know that movie Grease, when a guy at the top starts walking down dressed up in white, beauty school dropout. I love that song. So if you dig it up, you know, whatever you get around, I'll be listening to your show over the next few days.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. So, you know, talking about interference for interest, which we were doing moments ago. And the bottom line is if you are listening, especially to AM, and you're finding interference, consider using a Wi-Fi radio. Virtually every station streams, and so many, you're talking about literally tens of thousands. So if you're having an interference problem at home, best thing to do is get yourself the CC Wi-Fi 3. Now, why do I pick that one? Well, like everything Bob Crane has developed, it has terrific reception. Now, this isn't terrestrial reception like AM or FM. This is reception to your wireless access point, your wireless router. And you know what that's like. Some things don't connect well, or the connection drops, or get a lot of buffering. Yeah, and then makes it less than enjoyable if you're trying to listen to audio. Well, with the CC Wi-Fi 3, it's going to connect to the most lackluster wireless access point or wireless router, so that no longer becomes a problem. The other thing is it's intuitive. It's very easy to use. So if you're thinking, oh God, here comes the learning curve, not really. You can set it up on your own, probably not even opening a manual as far as, but you know, when you do have questions, they've got terrific customer service at the C. Crane Company. Just give them a call at 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But unlike some of the aggregators, no apps to download, no monthly fees, no ads on the screen, no microphones listening, and you can listen to things with crystal clarity that you would just not hear otherwise, particularly with all the interference that's going on. The Wi-Fi 3 comes with a full-size remote control, and it will really do the job. As I say, thank God they didn't have these in the 1950s, or I never would have left my bedroom. That would have been it. Yes, just shove meat under the door from time to time, because you will not run out of things that you want to hear. So check it out. And by the way, this week only, $10 off your purchase of the CC Wi-Fi 3. So that's a nice savings. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, receive your $10 off. If you can't go online for some reason, well, probably you don't want a Wi-Fi radio, but you may be buying for a friend, and it's a great gift. Call them. And even if you're buying for yourself and you've got great wireless access, you may have some questions. Call them. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, man, check it out. Go to ccradio.com. Look at the CC Wi-Fi 3. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Your story's sad to tell. A teenage ne'er-do-well, most mixed up, non-delinquent, on the block. Your future so unclear now, what's left of your career now? Can't even get a trade in on your smile. We'll be right back. dropout. No graduation day for you, beauty school dropout. Missed your midterms and flunked shampoo. Well, at least you could have taken time to wash and clean your clothes up after spending all that dough to have the doctor fix your nose up. Baby, get moving. Why keep your feeble hopes alive? What are you proving? You've got the dream, but not the drive. If you go for your diploma, you could join a steno crew. Turn in your T's and comb and go back to high school. Beauty school dropout.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yes, Frankie Avalon, obviously for Grease, and Jim Jacobs wrote it, co-wrote it, and of course, like the rest of Grease. And it came out as a single also on Delight in 1978. The flip side was Midnight Lady, which actually was produced and written by Billy Terrell, who we've had on the show before. All right, so there you have Beauty School Dropout, why not? 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, Marty and Whiting, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Evening, Raleigh. Second time caller this week.
All righty, then.
I'm teasing Bob. If you're listening, I'm teasing you.
Yeah, of course.
I'd like to request, I'm still mourning Dolly, I'd like to request a song that I didn't never know she did this. You've heard of the band Collective Soul?
Mm-hmm.
I guess a few years back, and I think it's called Shine, but Dolly Parton did this.
Okay.
Sung it before. We did it.
Okay. And that's what you want to hear.
Yeah. Okay. By Dolly, obviously.
Well, right.
Her version.
Got it.
And then...
Yeah, I've got it. I actually have it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I'm not a Collective Soul band fan. Well, nothing against them, but when I heard Dolly had redone it, it's like, I'd like to listen to that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, is it just Dolly or Hello Dolly? Was it by Satchmo?
Well, he certainly had the hit, Louis Armstrong. He didn't like to be called Louis. I don't think he wrote it. But we can find that out.
Okay. And that'll cover me on my request. Mm-hmm. And I just read this morning's Tribune that I think your listeners would like to hear this, because Dolly lives so close to the University of Tennessee. I guess the head coach on the football team, he decided they're going to put Dolly Parton stickers on their helmets for this coming year for the football season.
Excellent. That's so nice. She would love that.
That blew me away. I thought, that is very awesome. He called her the Queen of East Tennessee.
Absolutely. By the way, Hello Dolly, it was Jerry Herman who wrote it. And, of course, it was from that musical Hello Dolly. So that's where that came.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And Louis, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but Louis Armstrong, his nickname was Satchmo, am I correct?
Yes. And again,
okay.
He hated when people called him Louis Armstrong. He says, Louis. And even when you hear Hello, Dolly, you hear it in that, this is Louis, Dolly. And it's funny because someone else who was big earlier in his career, of course, was Louis Jordan. And half the time, people would call him Louis Jordan, and who wanted to be called Louis, and called Louis Armstrong Louis. So, you know, you just can't figure it out. But that's the deal.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And today, correct me if I'm wrong, but Rosalind Ashford, is she from Ashford and Simpson?
Yeah.
Today she turned, 80 or 81, I think it was?
As far as that goes, she was with Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, not Ashford and Simpson, and she turned she turned 83 today, I think. Born in 1943. So Rosalind Ashford.
Okay. So, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And with, then last thing, thank you very much. You played not just one J.P. Morgan song, but two.
Yes.
The first one, I was wide awake, and then I started to doze off for the second one that you played, and I instantly woke up. It's like, that has to be J.P. Morgan, so I might have missed 4 or 5 seconds of it, but I got it recorded too, so thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I figured since the first one was a duet with Eddie Arnold, I should at least do one standalone there, so that's why I played the second one.
Yeah, that one threw me off with Eddie Arnold, but still, it's like, I'm not positive, but I'm going to record it anyways on my phone,
yeah,
just in case it is a J.P. Morgan.
Oh, it was.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for, just like everybody else tells you, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
You always play my request.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, and Rosalind Ashford for, you know, Detroit All the Way, and, you know, the usual stuff, singing in choruses and high school and all of that kind of stuff. And they were singing at the YMCA, and at the same time, the guy who was heading that program also recruited Annette Beard and Gloria Williams to form a sister group. And Martha Reeves was not an original member of the Delphi's, which was the group. So Reeves didn't join in what became Martha and the Vandellas until about 1960. But yeah, the Delphi's were pretty big, and they released something on Chess, one of the Chess labels. I don't think it was Chess itself. It was like Checkmate or something. But in any event, then they became the Vells, yeah, Camel Walk, and There He Is at My Door, and all that kind of stuff. And they also did the background on Marvin Gaye's Stubborn Kind of Fella and Hitchhike, so just terrific. And so Martha had recruited them to back her on a demo. It was actually meant for Mary Wells. I have to let him go. And Berry Gordy heard it, of course, and she was a secretary there at the time, and he said, you know, we can get your contract here. And they did, and hence Martha and the Vandellas. So that was the start of that. But so yes, that's Rosalind Ashford as opposed to Ashford and Simpson. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. All right, so last night we were talking to Eduardo. And oh, let me also mention, I did this in the third hour, and we didn't hear back because I thought that's usually when Tubby calls. And Bev from Arlington Heights had sent me an email saying, whatever happened? And she wasn't the only one, but she was the most recent. Whatever happened to Tubby? I don't know. But so I tried in the third hour, and now I'm trying in the first hour. Tubby, if you're still with us, and I hope you are, we'd love to hear from you, just know what's going on and all of that. So, yeah. That's the deal. So hopefully she will call. And hopefully you will too. 888-876-5593. All right. Now, Eduardo yesterday brought up these anti-surveillance shirts, you know, mask your face from surveillance cameras. And, you know, I thought to myself, God only knows what you'll be exposed to here, and had no idea what it was. So, of course, after the show, I had to look it up. And and also I started my project on the history of all the record labels, because now everything's owned by one of the big three, pretty much. So I'm working on each label, a little trajectory of how they got from their start to that. But anyhow, while I was doing that, I took time out to find out about the anti-surveillance shirts. It was not what I expected. Apparently, it's a digital camouflage, and there's an artist, Simon Weikert, who uses mathematically engineered patterns to confuse AI object detection systems so they fail to recognize a human. So adversarial patterns, the fabric uses loud colors and shapes like pink, green, and orange that disrupt the textures and edges. Oh, you must look like $1 million walking down the street in that. AI cameras look for specific human outlines, but the design overloads these visual clues, so the system drops the tracking box around the person. And instead of seeing a torso or a person, the computer vision algorithm reads the pattern as an empty space or digital noise. Now, of course, this doesn't work with every shirt, obviously, but they're selling it. $88, a garish button-up shirt designed by Simon, designed to stop AR person detection. And, yeah, so There's an Italian fashion project that is using unique patterns to trick facial and body recognition into misidentifying humans as animals. That's right. They're coming out like zebras. That would be interesting. University of Maryland sweatshirt and academic prototype features a pixelated micro fleece print design designed to block machine learning person detectors. It's not an invisibility cloak. That would be nice, wouldn't it? All of these are doing are they're targeting specific computer vision models, and they're going to fail against different camera software or upgraded algorithms or whatever. So it's not one size fits all by any means. And the deal is, while it may be invisible to certain AI, the shirts are absolutely visible to human. They stand out immediately. Yeah, if you want to stand out from the crowd, wear one of these things. And that's the deal with the shirts. So it's not. I couldn't imagine, you know, wearing your own Faraday cage. Yeah, they have stuff for that too, but that's not what this was. All right. So, just wanted to keep you abreast of the latest in fashion, if you want to call it that. In addition to Rosalind Ashford, Jimmy Clanton, who is still with us. Jimmy Clanton is 88 years old today, born in Raceland, Louisiana. And, of course, Venus in Blue Jeans and Go Jimmy Go and so much more. Let's see. Sam Gooden, he would have been 92 today, born in Chattanooga, as you probably know. And he and Arthur Brooks met Jerry Butler and Curtis Mayfield. And the Impressions were born. Gooden and Mayfield share the lead vocals on It's All Right. And he also sings lead on I Want to Be Around. And he's been dead about, I don't know, 4 years now, 87 years old when he died. But he would have been 92 today. Yeah. Freddie King would have been 92 tomorrow. He was born in Gilmer, Texas, grew up in Dallas. And he's been gone since 1976, though. Just he was only 42 years old and played guitar for over a decade. And, of course, grew up on the south side of Chicago. All right, Billy Preston. He would have been 80 today. Born in Houston, grew up in L.A., and you know all about that. Sadly, died 20 years ago in Scottsdale, just 59 years old. And Bobby Purify of James and Bobby. Of course, he wasn't really Bobby Purify. He was Robert Lee Dickey. But he was James Purify's cousin, and he was the original Bobby Purify because, you know, Purify and Dickey just didn't get it. So James and Bobby were a little bit better. And he left for fairly on, though. There was a disagreement there between the two of them. And I forget the particulars, but it offended Bobby's sensibilities, let's just say that. He was perhaps a little more prudish than James. All right, and anyway, that's the deal. And after he left, we had another Bobby, and that was Ben Moore, actually. And he's been gone a few years as well. So who was Memphis Slim would have been 111 today, and Hank Thompson would have been 101. He was so great. So many country songs that Hank Thompson wrote that were just classic lyrics. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. And Bailey is a first-time caller. All right, Bristol, Tennessee. All right, Tri-Cities. Hello, Bailey.
Hi, Raleigh. How you doing?
All right, how about yourself? What's up?
Doing good. We were talking about the record labels and all that, and one of the last people to record for Starday just passed.
Oh, who?
Or last living. Frankie Miller.
Oh, really? Okay. Really? Okay.
Had a hit with Blackland Farmer in 59.
Yeah.
And he was one of the last Louisiana Hayride people as well.
Yeah, I did not know. All right, so he would have been probably in the Dallas area, I would guess.
Arlington.
Yeah, that's Dallas. That's a suburb.
Yeah.
All right. So, when he did Blackland Farmer, that was the original Starday. That was like 1956. And so a lot of other stuff as well. I think he was on UA for a while in the 60s. And then later he left the music business. And I think he was like selling cars or something like that. But Blackland Farmer for Starday was big, and Family Man, and Little South Memphis, and yeah, he was on both Louisiana Hayride and he was on a Grand Ole Opry. I don't think he was a member of the Grand Ole Opry, but he appeared on it several times. it's tough to be a member because you're forced to do a minimum of 10 appearances a year at scale. So,
Yeah.
A lot of people say, no, I'm not really down for that. Although they had a weird thing that if you would do Saturday night, that would count as three nights versus if you did the Tuesday night. But yeah, he used to open for Ernest Tubb. And I remembered that about him. Well, I did not know. And frankly, I hadn't thought about him in a long time. But I know he used to do some of those Willie Nelson picnics in more recent years. So that's the list.
Yeah, and he did a European tour about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. went to Sweden and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting. And, of course, Bear Family released a lot of the stuff, and they probably set it up, actually, England and Sweden. Yeah, it's interesting how we throw away our history, but the U.K. and much of Europe remembers it fondly.
Oh, I know. I've sent so many records to England in my life.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet. All right, well, I'm so glad you called, and I hope you're going to do it again.
Well, thank you so much, Raleigh. Right. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Okay, bye. All right, how nice to meet Bailey of the Tri-Cities. We'll get to Nick in Baltimore. He's traveling. We'll find out where he's going on WGN Radio.
Give me a word, give me a sign. Show me where to look and tell me what will I find. Show me where to look and tell me what will I find, what will I find, yeah. Oh, heaven let your light shine down. Oh, heaven let your light
James. Well, there it is. You wanted shine, you got shine. Dolly Parton, she got a Grammy for that, actually, in 2002. Recorded in 2001, it was on the Little Sparrow album. And it came out on Sugar Hill. And I remember when I first thought that, you gotta be kidding me, not that Sugar Hill. All right. It was a label out of Durham, North Carolina, Barry Poss's label. And then he sold it to Welk. And then later, long after Dolly was involved, it was Concord. And yeah, my new project of finding what happened to all the labels. So yeah, it was acquired by Concord, and then it was merged into Rounder. But when she was doing that, it was owned by Wilk. All right, so there you have Shine, and a fine song all the way around. And yes, it is a cover, as we were saying, and damn good one too. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Well, we'll get the headlines from Nick, then we'll find out about the news, and then we'll come back for the full story. So what's going on, Nick? Where are you?
I'm fine. We're having a storm here, so you know, if they drop out, you'll know why. But I'm not traveling anywhere. I just wanted to mention traveling because I'm fascinated with different places, and I'm always asking questions about Alaska, and I don't know why I'm fascinated with Alaska, but
all right,
I am.
We will get back to that Alaska and whatever else is on your mind right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Only a fool gun hat. Unhand that gun, be gone. There's no one to fire upon. If he's holding it high, he's telling a lie. I heard it was you talking about a world. Say that the man in the street dragging his feet don't want to hear the bad news. Imagine your face there in its place, standing inside his brown shoes. You do his 9 to 5, drag yourself home half alive. There on the screen, a man with a dream. Anybody on the street has murder in his eyes. You feel no pain, and you're younger than you realize.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Steely Dan, the album was Can't Buy a Thrill. It also was the flip side of the first single they released on ABC in 1972. That's right, the flip of Reelin' in the Years, you betcha. And Fagan and Becker wrote it. And a fine song it was, and that was a request. I've been meaning to play it for a while now, and apologies for it taking so long, but Brian and Seneca wanted to hear that. All right, so back to Nick in Baltimore. So what's up, Nick?
Hey. A couple of things. The caller before me was from Bristol, Virginia, right?
Uh huh.
And it was interesting. I really enjoyed his call. There was a station down there, WFHG, I think.
Uh huh.
And I got it one time back in 1973. And it was on 980. I don't know what they are now, if they're there. But
well, of course, all you'd hear now is Super Talk 92.9, like anything else.
They're doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was that came in only once, and it was like July.
Yeah.
It was 1973, and this is when RSC was top 40, and it, you know, was listening to them, and of course DXing. At night.
Right.
Speaking of DXing, GN is coming in.
Good.
Very, very strong. However, we're having a thunderstorm, a severe storm, and the lightning is too great. So I'm listening to you on the Wi-Fi. So.
Okay. All right.
So that's...
I think that 980 is Rhythmic now, and I don't know how much they do in terms of oldies, but they have an FM also with it, 105.3, but WWTB for The Beat.
WWTB, okay, I'll check it out.
Mm.
You know, but I remember them years ago, you know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, the Alaska thing again. Well, two things. Alaska and then Key West.
Okay.
How about that?
Well, both, Alaska. By the way, both, by the way, a bitch to get to. But all right.
Yeah, well, it's a big bridge, you know.
The 7 Mile Bridge, but it's a lot—it's a lot nicer now. When we used to take it when I was down there, you know, 60 years ago, it was a rickety 2-lane, but it's now basically a highway.
How far is that from Miami? It's like 130 miles or something.
Yeah, well, let's think about this, because Dade County goes down to Homestead, and then you get into, I think it would be Collier that would go down to the Key West. Yeah, the problem with the Keys is it's 2-lane roads, and there's a lot of them, and you go through, you know, the basic Isla Moradas and everything else. So it's a couple hours if you're driving it.
What can you get down there? There's nothing. I mean, they have radio stations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. And there are also some other radio stations along the Keys, you know, licensed to various Keys. And then, of course, don't forget the good old government and Radio Marti.
Oh, so you get that.
Well, that's okay. Where it is. It's right down there. But I would say,
oh, really?
Yeah, if you were in downtown Miami, yeah, easily 150 miles, maybe a little longer. It's going to take you like 3.5 hours. But
now, how did they get television down there? I mean,
well,
they had to have cable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there was any television station licensed to the Keys. I think everything was Miami, and it was the guy who owned Womeco, Wolfson. He's the one who I think got it down there.
Oh, okay.
You know, but boy, he hated cable because, of course, he owned the movie theaters too and Channel 4 and all that. But I think,
oh god,
yeah.
Oh yeah, because that was a theater.
Womeco, of course, it was huge. And you know, when I'm trying to think of what his last happy. It was a country music disc jockey who actually, along with Walk. What was Walk? I can't remember Walk's first name. But anyway, he was from Dynamic Broadcasting in Pittsburgh. But anyway, the two of them, Happy Harold and Walk, applied for a CATV franchise in Hialeah, and I thought Wolfson was going to have a heart attack. And so what he did was he had these cutouts at every movie theater, and there would be dad with his pockets overturned and kids crying at his feet, and the slogan was, "Don't let the pay television monster encroach upon your home," you know, and all this stuff. He did everything to stop that, but still, in the back of my mind, he was involved in getting television down there, but I don't know.
Yeah, because I mean, from what I read, there were no. I mean, it was mostly UHF for a while, and then.
Of course, it was. But you know, there was virtually nothing there. You know, the nice thing about Key West is how close it was to Havana. So back before, you know, all the revolution and all that, you'd go down to Key West because you could just, you know, in an hour basically be in Havana.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the deal more than anything. But yeah, I'd say CATV was there early on. And,
It would have to be.
Well, it was. But then... by the 80s, they actually had a station, WETB, I think that was Channel 13 or whatever, and an act of Congress mandated that the channel be reserved for TV, Marti, you know, so all of that. But but yeah, it was a CATV, you know, your basic 12-channel non-interactive CATV deal through the Keys.
Because I'm thinking, you know, even, no matter what kind of antenna you had, you'd never be able to pull a signal from...
Yeah,
Miami. I mean, it's too far out. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Unless you were DXing.
Right, which, you know, not with reliability. You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to think who, because I would have been down there when they put that first CATV system on. I think it was Spotwood. I think the guy was named like Spotwood or whatever. In any way, this would have been the mid-50s, and the guy was some type of a politician. I don't remember, but I think he might have been the sheriff, or right? Something like that. But what he did when he put that system on, he called it, it was original then, but Cablevision. And so, you know, that was interesting because he couldn't really do it as a retrans. Because, you know, what was going on, like Bill Daniels systems in Colorado and in New Mexico and Wyoming and all that, those were basically retrans. But you couldn't do that as far as retransmission because of the way, like you're talking about, the distance and the land and all that. So what it was more like closed circuit television. And, you know, subscribers on the island got whatever he could bring in, but he wasn't getting it over the air.
Well, couldn't they? But later on, they could microwave it.
Yeah, later. But you know,
I know all the Miami stations had translators.
Oh yeah, later
happened.
Right, but no, this was Cablevision, and something tells me that that Southern Bell was involved in this as well. But I haven't thought about this in, what, 70 years? So, you know, but...
I always have these weird questions.
Well, it's good. It makes me think in terms of,
I don't know, but I don't know why I'm fascinated with that stuff, because I guess I'm, you know, because the thing is, Raleigh, you're talking about traveling, and, you know, now with the computer, you can go, I can sit here at my house, and I can go anywhere, you know, via the video thing, and they have these webcams on the beach,
right?
You know, Key West. So when the hurricanes come in, those things, you can see what's going on, and it's really wild. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's and of course with streaming, you get live coverage of whatever live come. Now I think the stations down there just carry the TV stations.
Well, you've got more than Key West. You know, the Keys are a lot of islands, and they go, like, yeah, I say, from south of Homestead down, and the biggest one, of course, is Key Largo. But you've got...
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, that's the largest in the chain. But, you know, you've got Tavernier and Plantation Key and Long Key and Conch Key, and there's a bunch of other keys. And then the lower keys, like Big Pine and all that. And Monroe County, it's not Collier County, it's Monroe County. Dade Broward, Monroe County. And then there was Dry Tortugas, which that actually was 70 miles west of Key West, so it's not really a key, but it sort of is.
I'm running over here, but I love Florida, but I, you know, and I'm fascinated with it, and I love to live down there, but I'm afraid of hurricanes. Because a friend of mine lived in the Keys, and she lived through Wilma. And she said that was horrible, that hurricane.
Yeah.
Not Hurricane Wilma.
Right. No, I guess I had three of them. Donna, Cleo, and Betsy were the three that I had. And Donna was nothing.
Oh.
That was 1960. And then Cleo and Betsy were one year after the other, and it was like either 63 and 64 or 64 and 65, but right in there. And, you know, for one thing, you get a lot of advance warning. So if you were really afraid of hurricanes, you can leave. I mean, it's not like a tornado.
Yeah.
There's no surprise involved in this. You know for days. That the likelihood is high. Now, of course, at the last minute, things can turn in either direction, and you can either get something you're not expecting or not get something you were expecting. But for the most part, you got some warning. So that's there. And the other thing is you kind of learn the rules. Now, I will say that as I look at some of the buildings they put up right on the Atlantic, I kind of wonder, because they just weren't there back then. But, you know, for instance, you know, let's say you're, and I did, I lived in an apartment on the Atlantic, actually, and you always make sure that you keep windows open on the opposite side so you don't implode everything, because if everything is
the air pressure.
Yes, oh yes. Where I was living, the apartment above me, there was no one in it, and the windows were tight closed, and it was a furnished apartment, and man, when I saw the bed sail out the window, I thought, it's prime time now. You know,
yeah.
You know, or like when you're looking out the window and the portalette goes down the block, you know, it's like, oh, look at this. But you know, basically your big windows, you tape them, it's just not really a problem. The worst problem is what I love to call Florida Flicker and Flash, Florida Power and Light, because you lose your power for like a week.
Yeah.
And that always drove me crazy. But but I would say in terms of the upper keys, you could get Channel 4 in the upper keys. So, you know, even the middle keys, you know, the buildings that were a little higher. But, you know, from Key West to Cuba, that's closer than Key West to Miami. So some people would listen.
It's only 93 miles.
Yeah, well, so there you go. And you could see some of that wasn't very good, but like about 1950, a Havana station started, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, so that's sort of what was a hodgepodge as far as that goes. But you definitely could see WTBJ Channel 4 in the upper and middle keys. Not Key West, but the upper and middle keys, not a problem.
Hmm.
So.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just, you know, I'm just fascinated with it because it's, you know, it's always, the whole country fascinates me, Raleigh.
Oh yeah.
Even where we live. believe it or not.
Well, it's all fascinating, you know, traditionally, because today it's homogenized and everything's pretty much almost the same and all that. But, you know, it used to have very unique identities. And it was interesting. And, of course, things like broadcasting in general, it's relatively new, you know. Certainly television, certainly that came around in most of our lives. Well, maybe not yours, but close. It hasn't been that many years. You know,
when I was born, it was, you know, in its infancy, I guess. I was born in 57, so.
Well, 57, everybody had stations by then, pretty much. And now, it was interesting that, of course, in the major markets, you got at least three Vs, maybe a lot more in the really big markets. But, you know, it was always interesting in the small markets how you didn't. You either, you know, got a couple Us, or in some cases, like Palm Beach. For years, Palm Beach only had two stations, 5 and 12. That was it. And so there was a shared network affiliation on one of them. And the weirdest shared network.
Wheeling, West Virginia.
The weirdest shared network deal was actually a place in Maine, Presque Isle, Maine. One station, NBC, ABC, and CBS. And they would, once a year, the city council would decide what they were going to carry. And one year, they didn't carry Johnny Carson, and every one of them got voted out.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you know, so that stuff was going on, and you know, there was no at the time CATV there. I don't know why, but there wasn't.
And now you can do it all on one channel now.
Well, sure, absolutely, sure. Yeah, have your sub channels. Why not? Yeah, quality be damned, but sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Programming too, but
well, yeah, there is. There is that.
It, you know, I've always wondered, and because it's just, you know, those kinds of things fascinate me, and I was always, I guess I was born with a radio in my ear, because I can remember as a little kid, you know, I remember when there were stories on the radio.
Oh, of course.
In the early 60s.
Of course.
You know.
Well, then, hell, in the 70s, let's face it, CBS Radio Mystery Theater was wonderful with Hyman Brown.
Oh, yeah.
We all loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's my story. I didn't get to Alaska, but, you know.
Well, there's another call. We'll talk about Alaska next time.
Next time.
Okay.
Hey, right. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. I'm glad you called. Thanks.
All right.
So... Yeah, 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And there were a lot of closed-circuit channels, too. That was a weird thing in a lot of areas. Miami Beach used to have one of those. Anyway, I digress. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine right here on WGN Radio. She was on Monument, and Fred Foster put a lot into her. Ray Stevens arranged and produced that. Ben Peters wrote it, and that's pretty much writing royalty when it comes to Nashville. He, I think 6 of Charlie Pride's number one songs were written by Ben Peters. I think he recorded like close to 70 of his songs. But so many, Turn the World Around was probably my favorite, and Eddie Arnold and everybody else. And yeah, that's a no-no. Oh, God, Lynn Anderson. But that was number one in 1969. Kiss an Angel Good Morning, that's one that Charlie Pride said I mentioned. And Before the Next Teardrop Falls, and Daytime Friends, A Nighttime Lover, all that, yeah. And a lot more as far as that goes. So I forget who requested Control Yourself, but it was a B-side of a 1966 single when they were trying to market Dolly as a pop act. And as I was saying, Ray Stevens produced several of the songs she did there, and that was one of them. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And what do we have here? I believe we go back to Ottawa. Yes, yes, by Chattanooga. And Brett, welcome back to WGN Radio. What's happening tonight?
Oh, it's so wonderful to be back, Raleigh. Your program is, as far as I'm concerned, the best thing on AM radio.
Very nice.
Right now. It's been a blessing to me in many ways. It's like eased some anxiety I've felt lately, and it's just like the best thing. I've been DXing a long time. I'm 52 years old as of August. And, man, when I was probably 6 or 7 years old, my dad had a Holocrafter's, let's see, S-38D with the slide rule dial.
Did he build it?
That thing.
Did he build it himself?
He didn't build it.
Okay.
No, it wasn't a kit. The Holocrafter's S-38 series, they had a C and a D. The D had kind of like the rainbow-shaped
tuner,
but the C, actually, and I believe the D had the slide rule. That's the one he had, and I ran that thing until it blew the tubes out. And so he traded a 20 gauge for SX-110 Holocrafters, which I still have to this day.
And really? That's nice.
Last year I put in a new filter cap in it. In fact, it has like one of those 3-part filter caps, and I soldered in a new one myself, high quality FNT capacitors. But yeah, I've had my ham license since 2004.
Good.
Which I got my technician then, and I really quickly upgraded to general class. And back then you had to take the CW test, which I loved. I was looking actually forward to it.
Yeah.
And so on high frequency, on shortwave, on transmitting, I've basically been 99% CW, and I still work the code with folks. But
That's great. I remember I learned all the code and started to do that, and then I actually got a paying job, and I thought, well, the hell with this. But I should have continued, because it was a lot of fun. But I remember all of it.
So I for a while collected telegraph keys. I slimmed that down to I have about 10 or 12 keys now. I used to have over 20 Vibraplex and all that kind of,
neat,
pretty valuable keys, things like that. But, I have a few Italian and various. I have one more Vibraplex bug, still like a 1948 railroad era key that I restored. But something I wanted to mention, you were talking to a fellow about DXing and about his antenna, or about RFI interference. And one thing you can do, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, but if you use a loop antenna, especially a relatively small one, and you can make one yourself, but it has directionality, so you can null out noise in certain directions. And, and if you have intermodulation from two stations, or if you have, if you get on a frequency where you hear two simultaneous stations and there's one you particularly want to listen to, then, you can point the loop in the correct direction, and you'll null out the interference on the one
That is a good suggestion. I'll tell you the weirdest interference I knew of, in fact, when we were living in northern Idaho, I said to John, you got to hear this, is HARP, the aural array from Alaska. That sounded eerie. But there was almost something about it where I was transfixed when it would really gear up.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of... Yeah, especially when you get on some of the higher frequency bands and some of the shortwave bands. There's really interesting stuff, too. Things from outer space and just all sorts of noises and, you know, those number stations that you used to hear all the time.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
And I remember, I think recently CHU Canada.
Okay.
You know, which was calibration for like time.
Yep.
Atomic clock
that's,
base.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Shut down.
Yeah, they did
shut
down. Yeah, it was, because that was around forever. NRC, yeah. The National Research Council, had operated that 3330 and 7850 and 14670.
Correct.
Yeah, remember that that well. And it was sad, because from 1923 until June of this year, and thank you, government budget cuts. And so I think I heard the final transmission online, because there's a on YouTube. They have that.
Yeah. I saw the announcement that day. Yeah.
I was a little
bit bummed out about that.
Oh, of course.
I guess WWV is still up, isn't it?
Yes. They did have an antenna down for a while, but I think they're back up to everything working now. But yeah, it's a wonder. You wonder when that'll go to.
Yeah, I haven't checked them in a while, but yeah, recently I've been doing a log on AM broadcast band, just medium wave log, and tonight I was actually, when my wife and I were, you know, getting ready for bed, I just got up for a minute to call you, because I really wanted to talk about this issue, and DXing got me excited, because it always does.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, I heard you talking about the C-Crane internet radio, and I'm sure I'll get one when I have to. But I'm going to milk the AM broadcast band on RF for as long as I can.
Well, and I don't blame you. And if DXing is a hobby, Wi-Fi radio will never be comparable to that. It just won't. But if you're, you know, for people whose goal is just to hear certain stations, even in their own markets, it's really unbeatable for that. But it's not ever, it's never going to be a DXing hobby. Of course not. And there's nothing more thrilling, you know. And for years, when I was a kid doing this, I always used to think that there were some conspiracy that would fade out just when they were giving the call letters in the city. And sometimes you'd have to listen to like 2 hours before you knew what you were hearing.
Yeah.
And it was actually
a lot
of fun.
I was doing that tonight.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
I was dealing with that, like the QSB, you know, the momentary kind of going up and down, like it's getting pulled in the undertow, and then it comes back up, and then it goes back down, and it's like, you know, that up and down of the amplitude.
Sure, absolutely. So, and in the 70s and 80s, when I had to fly all the time, and I don't fly commercially now, I gave it up, but when I had to do it all the time, I would DX on planes and nonstop.
Oh, wow.
I didn't care what they said.
Totally awesome.
Yeah, it was. And especially actually FM was really resplendent, but AM as well. But you know, I remember so vividly, my big complaint was, you know, well, why don't they tell me where they are? And then you know, all the commercials and stuff. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, people on the ground know it when they're in Des Moines. They don't have to be told, you know, but they would bounce around, and it would be weird. Like, you know, Hayes, Kansas was on two-thirds of America. I think it was KJLS or something, but just, you know, I mean, literally two-thirds of the country. If they had that signal on the ground, that really would have been something. But yeah, I loved it. That's what I would do. I would just DX nonstop. And, you know, I mean, they had all their rules, which I ignored, because I figured, you know, no one's going to actually, maybe if the thing suddenly veered left or something, I might have thought about it. But I figured, you know, I couldn't bring the plane down with my DXing, at least I believed that. And yeah, no one ever stopped me. Did it for, you know, a few years.
Yeah, but I mean,
years.
In terms of, you were just receiving, though. You weren't transmitting.
Well, of course. Of course I was just receiving.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's another story.
Right. No. I wasn't trying to transmit. No. But even so, they used to have all these ridiculous rules about, you know, turn off your appliances.
Sure,
screw that. I'm not turning off my appliance.
Because, how do they know that, right. That your receiver is compliant with, you know, right. RF emissions, FCC regs and all that?
Right.
If they can't know for sure, even though most of them are.
Well, I figured if something was going to down the plane, it wouldn't be my transistor. So I just didn't worry about it very much. But it was a lot of fun because, man, those signals would bounce. And things that were kind of lackluster on the ground were, you know, great at 40,000 feet. Not that they ever had ratings at 40,000 feet, but in case they did, you know. So, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, I've been logging. My dad, when he got me into shortwave when I was, like, I mean, somewhere between 5 to 7 years old,
uh-huh.
back in, like, the late 70s, you know, he taught me to log. He's like, yeah, keep a log.
Because, yes.
You know, you'll be surprised how much you'll value that. And, of course, it went all the way into my ham radio years. And, you know, I wish I would have gotten my license sooner, but I just didn't get around to it. But I've always been into receiving, you know, and keeping track of that. And it's so much fun. But I think I probably will invest in one of those internet radios whenever interference gets to the point, or whenever, you know, enough AM stations. I think you mentioned last night on the show that some monumental station that you and the caller were really fond of, it shut down.
Oh, well, yeah.
So, you know, when that...
Yeah, that 840. That's the breakup of the clears. You know, in the 80s, they changed how much protection the clear channel frequency had to have, and they lessened that. And so suddenly you got stations on 720 and 840 in Las Vegas, or on 890 in St. George, Utah, you know, which were previously prohibited. And when they first signed on, it was so exciting what was going to be there. And, of course, you know, most of them have just faltered. I think the one that's on WNBC's frequency, that's 660. That's in Window Rock, Arizona. So if you want to hear the Navajos chant, you can still do that. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, right. It's a little eerie to hear that. But, yeah, it's all there. But, of course, when the border blasters were really border blasters, that was what was fun, like Radio Bonaire and the Lesser Antilles, or, you know, XER and then XERF in Del Rio with their 250,000 watts and, you know, all that.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it was great. Just great.
And yeah, I mean, I enjoy restoring tube equipment, and tube guitar amplifiers actually is something. I designed Class A, Class AB amplifiers. I play guitar, so that's, you know, that joins in with the whole, you know, enthusiasm of tube radios as well. So, but I think eventually, you know, when I have to listen to internet radio, then it'll still be a way to trigger the nostalgia emotionally, you know, because I'll still be listening to the radio broadcast.
Yeah, but sound wise, obviously, it's not going to have an EL34 anywhere in there. You know, you're not going to get the warmth. And you know, I used to love tube stuff, and especially like there was a Voice of Music that I had, a little portable stereo. I say portable, it had a handle, so it was luggable, but it had the nicest pear-shaped tones, and it wasn't accurate, of course, but I loved it. And when those tubes went out, man, you replace them, but it just wasn't the same. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
And that just broke my heart.
Okay, so you're saying pear-shaped tubes. Those are like early tubes.
Well, no, I mean just the pear shape, the warmth of the tubes.
Oh, okay, you're talking about the shape of the actual
Right. No, the shape of the sound, if you will. Yeah,
shape of the sound itself.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
But of course, I can always plug in my digital radio into a tube amp. You know, that's something.
Yes, you can.
I've got synthesizers.
Yes,
another hobby I've gotten into is analog synth, and I've been plugging my solid state synthesizers into some of my homebrew.
Good.
581, 6V6, and an EL84 and EL34 amps. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so funny, the arguments, like, I'm an EL34 girl, but, you know, some people say, well, a 6CA7 is just as good, or a KT77 is just as good, and, you know, I'm like, no, just no.
My ears can tell the difference.
Yes.
See, the thing is, like, if you can't tell the difference, then I guess you're right, but my ears can.
Well,
so it matters.
Of course, the other thing is today the music is recorded digitally, so start to finish, it's a whole different ball game. And the thing that's most offensive to me is when CDs came out and whatever possessed them to remix everything. No, leave the original 45 mix. There was a reason for that mix. Don't touch it.
Yep.
But they, you know,
it sounded better.
Right. I always said they gave Motown a soulectomy, and I'm pretty sure they did. Someone should have been shot for that series. But yeah, I'll take the 45s over anything. You betcha.
Yeah, basically, like a sonic frontal lobotomy.
Yeah. Right.
It's just it's not.
Right.
The same.
It's not the same.
Flattened.
All right. Well, fun memories.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad you called. Yeah. Do it again soon.
I certainly will, and all keep it up, because this is a beacon in the night of AM broadcast band.
Well, thank you. Well,
thank you, Raleigh.
Sleep well, and apologies to your wife for keeping you up.
She's asleep.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
To the router to talk to you.
God love it. Okay, thanks. I don't feel nearly as bad now. Okay, thanks. Okay, bye.
No,
yeah.
No deal.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So, good deal. So, we will have, let's see, with John in Covington, Mark in Aurora, hopefully you too, on WGN Radio. WGN Radio will forgo the bumper because I've got 2 minutes, and I'm going to spend them with John and Mark. So, John in Covington, welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you still there, John? Well, see, this is more time for Mark. Sorry about that. John went to sleep. He'll call us tomorrow night, I hope. So, John, Mark, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, I think you're going to have to take me after the news also.
I forgot about that. I've got another hour, don't I? See, I thought I was going away.
Yes, you have another hour.
I have a few
unusual DXs that probably only the obvious will be interested in, but I was thrilled when they happened to me. I have a bit of bad news from the Sea Crane Company. I was talking with their engineer recently, and their technician has retired for one thing, but for another thing, because of a certain politician's tariffs, Sea Crane has decided that it's too expensive to get parts. So if you need a radio repaired, you will probably just be told to buy a new one.
Yeah. You know, but interestingly enough, I think that in this disposable culture where we are right now, most people do that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but Crane would, it used to be that Crane would
fix stuff. Yeah, I know.
Replace your circuit board,
I know,
for you.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, I talked with Daryl once, who used to work there, and he said, basically, I replaced both of your circuit boards, so you've got your old cabinet, but basically you've got a new radio inside of it.
Right.
But, I mean, to me, the Sea Crane radios are on a par with the way the Sonys and Panasonics and Grundigs have been.
Yeah.
Just beautiful radios.
They are. They absolutely are. I hope they'll keep manufacturing them, because when you talk about parts being hard to get, everything else involved in this becomes hard to do.
Yeah. But I'll stay on the line with you and tell you about some DXs after the news.
All right. Hang on. Don't go away. And we'll pick it up right there, right here on WGN Radio.
At the dark end of the street, that's where we always meet, hiding in shadows where we don't belong, living in darkness to hide our wrong.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that, of course, is James Carr. I was enjoying that so much, I forgot I was on the radio. All right, Don and Beloit wanted to hear that, and that was on Gold Wax, yeah, which was a little Memphis label there, too, and that sort of was a medley of his hit, unfortunately, but 1966. All right, so 888-876-5593. I promise to pay better attention. No, I don't. Mark in Aurora. Let's pick it up there. What else? What? Tell me what else is going on.
I'll tell you about my two most unusual FMDXs, and they were, the FMDXs are more fun because they're not supposed to happen, strictly speaking, line of sight. But sometimes you get those ducks and you get those temperature inversions, and I had a couple of spectacular ones, especially one of them because it was a low power one. But the first one turned out to be BBC One from St. John, New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. And I was listening on a Fanfare FTA 100 tuner, and I bought that tuner because, well, AM stereo was still available back then, and I was kind of fascinated with the whole concept of AM stereo, because I even had an engineer friend who said, well, you can't do AM stereo. The bandwidth is too narrow. But they did it with phase modulation, which is kind of a technical term. But anyway, I'm fooling around with this tuner one fine morning here in Aurora, and I hear this station. And the first inkling I get that I'm listening to something far away is that they're giving temperatures in Celsius instead of Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept listening, and I found out it was CBC One from St. John, New Brunswick.
Uh-huh.
And that's 1,300 miles away from me, for heaven's sake.
Well, yeah, but that's how tropo ducting works, as you well. And generally, when that duct is open, you can get other stations in the same vicinity, as I've mentioned many times, driving through downtown D.C. and picking everything up midday from Little Rock. And again, I find it so hilarious that stations I would normally not listen to, say, if I were in Little Rock, suddenly are just fascinating while I'm driving around the Beltway. And, you know, that's the way it works for television as well. And ducting's fun.
Yeah.
The problem is that the duct will close within a couple hours. So while you get it, you want to stop what you're doing and just pay attention to this because it won't be there long.
Yeah, this one, I was fortunate, stayed around for at least 2 hours, if not more. But the second one was more spectacular because it was a low power station, as it turns out. Again, I was listening. This time I was using a Grundig Satellite 800, and I was listening to the Diane Rehm show from Rockford, Illinois, at 89.5, and suddenly this Christian station completely blocks it out.
Right.
And if one of the things I love about FM is that you can use capture ratio to rule out stations you don't want.
Yeah.
AM doesn't have that same capture ratio. And that basically means that if one signal is only like 1.5 dB louder than another, it'll totally drown the other one out. And so there I am listening, and I suddenly hear this Christian station, and when I hear the station ID, they announce themselves as being from Homestead, Florida.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I looked it up, and that was 1,400 miles away, roughly.
Oh, yeah.
And I called the station, and I talked with a secretary in the front office. I tracked down their number and so forth, and I told her that I was listening up in Aurora, Illinois, and she said, my God, that's amazing, because, you know, normally our signal barely goes north of the city.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And people who aren't into it, I could never get the rest of my family to understand why it was so much fun to pick up faraway stations.
Oh, absolutely.
It
really
is. It really is.
It absolutely is.
Speaking of all this, I'll tell you more about my class reunion another night, but I went back to the Buffalo area of New York State, and this is the first traveling I've done since I became totally blind, and I stayed with a I stayed with an old friend from church and school, and his wife, and well, I asked him to do some minor repairs on the inside of my CC3 radio, and he told me that the antenna screw was missing, and I thought, I know I had that screwed in tight. What's the problem here? And I finally figured out, to make a long story short, that it had to do with the Transportation and Security Administration, the TSA. Uh-huh. Apparently, some security guy in Chicago took upon himself to decide whether my radio had a bomb in it. So he took it apart.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I ended up missing two screws, and I'm also dealing with another problem that I think I've diagnosed. The AM/FM keeps going in and out, and I think it's because one of the modular plugs has been loosened from the circuit board.
Okay.
In the process of fishing around in there, they probably undid the cables to make sure I wasn't hiding contraband or a bomb, but just letting the listeners know, if you can avoid taking a big portable radio with you when you fly, they're going to take it apart. Now, they didn't take it apart in the Buffalo airport, but they did in the Chicago airport. And so I ended up missing two screws, not just one. And Sea Crane graciously has replaced them. And they also sent me an audio version of one of their instruction manuals on flash drive. But just, be warned. When you go flying, if you bring any electronic device with you that they think might have a bomb in it or might have contraband in it, they're going to take it apart.
Oh, well, now I'm sure that's true. And as I mentioned many times, the last time I flew commercially was not this century. So I will never do it again. But back when, never, ever, ever. But back when I did it all the time, no one ever bothered me.
Yeah, but during the summer, when the temperature inversions and the atmospheric darkness are happening, I've gotten stations from Texas while I was here in Chicago, and like I say, for me, the FM DX thing seems more fun because theoretically you're not supposed to be able to do it.
Well, there's another thing too, and that's even though the ducts are only around for a short period of time, couple hours usually at most, it's fairly consistent. The problem I always had with AM DXing, like I said before, is it would always fade out while they were giving the call letters or the city. You know, you'd listen for 4 hours and you're like, please tell me who you are, and all this. But ducts don't do that. It's solid.
I got my first Grundig in 1972, and I used to get up early in the morning. I was in Clarence, New York, which is near Buffalo. I used to get up early in the morning to listen to KFI Los Angeles.
Sure.
Now, that was back when the 640 frequency didn't have a lot of
when it was
oxygen.
Wide open. And that was true with all the clears at the time. When they were wide open, you could get them for great distances, especially in that sweet time of just before sunup and just before, after sundown. Those are the marvelous hours. You know, you can be sitting in Macon, Georgia, be listening to WNOE in New Orleans. Now, I know.
Now, I can still get WHAS on 840. Uh-huh. What's the other station that's taken over 840?
Well, no, not taken over. They just signed off. They're gone. When the clear.
Which one was that?
It was Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, remember
I never got that one.
Well, you wouldn't have, but it was in the mid 80s when they were breaking up the clears, and so obviously they were directional patterns, but the 660 went to Window Rock, and the 840 went to Las Vegas, and the 890 went to St. George, Utah, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, for the good old days when you really could listen to a clear channel station.
Yes,
in fact, when you're up in Buffalo, there's a Canadian station that will intermodulate with WGN 720.
Uh-huh.
And, but But you're also close enough to get a good ground wave on Zoomer Radio 740.
Right, right. Yeah, Zoomer Radio
is a lot of fun.
Yeah, pretty ubiquitous. You can hear that all over the place.
And the way AM high frequencies behave during the day can be amazing. I was in New Jersey one year for somebody's, it was either a wedding or a wedding rehearsal. But anyway, I was in New Jersey and lo and behold, during the day, WKBW came in.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that would happen.
It was clearly bouncing off the ionosphere because the ground wave only reaches out to about Syracuse, New York.
Understood.
But it got a daytime bounce, and it was there in New Jersey on my Sony AM stereo radio.
That would happen a lot in Pennsylvania as well. Now, of course, at night on the ionosphere layer, it was very common. In fact, they even a couple times had record hops in Pennsylvania on KB. But, occasionally in the day you'd have the same thing happening, of course. But, you know, you keep mentioning AM stereo, and that's kind of a heartbreak because they didn't standardize a system.
It was.
You know, that was why
it had to take a walk because the FCC let them fight it out.
Right, so it would be a marketplace.
With FM, they'd always said you will use this format. With AM, they said, yeah, you guys fight it out.
Well, right, it's like, my God, if they did that with television, we never would have gotten color.
Not
that I thought never twice same color was a great system, but at least it was standardized.
Yeah.
So the engineer
in me figured out a way to do something about the platform motion that you would get.
Yeah.
It would be the same principle that they used on color TV to stabilize the colors a little better. It was called a color burst, and I.
Hello. Well, there we got a real burst. We just lost Mark. All right. Well, I hope you're all right, Mark. It didn't sound good from here. Oh, John from Covington called back. We'll get there. Mike in Elmwood Park as well. There's plenty of room for you, too. And, I got to get another couple requests in here, I promise, coming up on WGN Radio.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show. Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do.
Saturday night and the movies. Who guess what picture you see?
Technicolor and CinemaScope, a cast out of Hollywood, and the popcorn from the candy stand makes it all seem twice as good.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. There it is, The Drifters, 1964. Barry Mann, Cynthia Will wrote it, and Teacho Wilser arranged it, but Burt Burns produced it. A fine song it was in 1964. Saturday Night at the Movies, and that was a request from Mike in Elmwood Park. All right, who I think is going to be talking to us again. Now, before we get to John and Covington, who called back, don't go away, John, but Joe in Phoenix has called several times and never has gotten on, wanting to talk about bullion coins. He's in Phoenix. So, Joe, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Okay, so on the website I use for spot prices, gold's at basically 4,400 right now. Silver at 6,655.
Okay.
Platinum at 1783, palladium at 1384. Oh, that makes me cry because when I first started following metals, palladium was at like $300 an ounce.
Oh, I know.
So they call silver the poor man's gold.
Right.
But what do you think about platinum?
That was one of the biggest shocks to me because platinum had always outpaced gold traditionally. And it's been about 10 years ago now that it went the other way. And I remember I was talking with the one woman, Melody Cederstrom, who I trust implicitly on precious metals. And I said, man, it's such a bargain. I want to get it now. And she said, don't be so quick. And she said, yeah, I don't know that's going to come back. And it hasn't. Now, will it? Yeah, maybe. But it's an industrial metal, as you know. And so there's questions there, too. But, man, I didn't think we would ever see it depressed this long. But there it is.
And what do you think about silver? More specifically, the 90% junk silver.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, silver has been so low priced in general. I mean, it's higher now, a lot higher now than it was, but that you could stand to make a lot of money because, you know, it could actually double and not be that off the mark. But the problem is that it's volatile. So my feeling about it is, if you're willing to kind of make this your life's advocation and really watch this and all, I think you can do well. But people like me who just don't have the time or interest, you can be slaughtered.
Well, there's been like conspiracy theory,
yes,
like kind of talk that says, buy the junk silver because you can barter with it or use it for
trade. Right, and that's also, the argument against, make sure if you're buying gold, don't have all $20 St. Gaudens or something. You know, you want something it's more negotiable, of course. But, and I think there, well, hang on a minute. John says I got to do the news. Stay where you are, because I got a lot to say, and I'm glad you called.
Okay.
So hang on, and we'll pick it up there on WGN Radio. James. Garnet Mims and the Enchanters, a lot of people think of them as a Philadelphia group, and they certainly were from Philadelphia, but they had relocated to New York before that. And Cry Baby was really the work of two people, Burt Burns, who co-wrote it, and Jerry Ragavoy, who produced it. And definitely the biggest hit that Garnet Mims or the Enchanters ever had, though. A year later, when Garnet Mims and the Enchanters did A Quiet Place, I thought arguably that was a contender. But no, he remained a one-hit wonder. And that was Robert in Chicago who wanted to hear that, and hopefully he did. All right, so 888-876-5593. We get back to Joe in Phoenix. All right. When we talk about precious metals, people buy them for different reasons. And you got into the idea of if all goes to hell, everything hits the fan, what then? And you're absolutely right to be thinking that low denomination is going to be the way to go. There's two things involved. One is low denomination. The other is that everybody knows what it is and agrees to what it is. And when you're talking about junk silver, which is 90% prior to 1965, everybody knows what that is. So as far as if you're suddenly going to have to be on the barter system, that's not a bad place to be. That would also be true with smaller gold coins. But, some people buy it because they think that it's going to go way up. You know, you have a lot of people, oh, I'm going to be rich, the gold market, here we go. And that's another reason to buy. The problem with that is that more gold is sold every day on paper than exists in real stock anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I found that to be really strange.
Well, it really controls price more than anything. So you've got a lot of different externals that cause the price to be one that, you know, logistically speaking, when you look at the level of debt the world is carrying, gold should be worth $10,000 an ounce, you know, but it's not.
Well, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
If they've got paper on like twice the amount of gold
right.
that exists, then how come when you call your friendly neighborhood gold dealer and you order a coin, they always have it?
Well, because you can get the coins as far as that goes. And when you call your friendly neighborhood dealer, that's another thing. Make sure you know exactly who you're dealing with, because
right.
some of the commissions are just so unconscionable that it just shouldn't be happening. So you've got to get somebody you actually trust. But sure, you can get it in small denominations. Now, what would happen if you called your neighborhood gold dealer and you were looking for $100 million worth of it? It might not be as easy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when we're talking about it, we're buying a couple coins, you know. I'll take a $20 Liberty, thank you, or whatever. So that's a lot different. But the thing that's undeniable about precious metals, and it, you know, whether the world goes to hell or it doesn't, or whether gold jumps to $1 zillion or it doesn't, this is the only thing that you can invest in that will always have intrinsic value. It will never be worthless if you have possession of the metal. Gold isn't gold on paper isn't worth the paper it's printed on. Likewise,
I remember you saying that like 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Gold IRAs, no, because you don't have possession of the metal. I mean, you know, the thing is, if you're getting it because you want it, you know, in just in case, so to speak, you have to have the metal. And so depending on how much money you have, having a mix of investments is a really good idea. And having some things that are always going to have value is a really good idea. But on the other hand, if you're wondering where you're going to get money to have dinner Sunday, then forget about it. You know, don't worry about the fact that, my God, it can all go to hell in a handbasket and we need everything
right now.
Well,
that might be silver.
Yeah, well, if you have a little disposable income and you want a bit of silver, it's not bad.
No, I'm saying in the future, might be used to go out.
Well, right. But then we're going back to that everything melted down. And there are so many variables about that. You know, obviously, we have a fiat currency, as you know. And so it's only worth what they quote unquote, they say it is worth. So, you know, all bets are off. I'm not great at reading balance sheets, but every time I do, my eyes cross when I see the level of debt that most of these companies are carrying. So, you know, I'm not the best person to ask. But if you can have a little bit of precious metals, go for it.
Great. Well, thank you.
I'm glad you called. I hope you'll do it again.
I will. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Have a great
appreciate
night.
It. You too. All right. So, yeah, I'm so pleased we finally got to talk, because Joe tried like 3 or 4 times and we ran out of time, and that was just terrible. All right. So we'll get to John in Covington. In fact, we'll do that right now as we speak. All right. Let me do this. John, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, Raleigh.
Right.
I don't know what happened the first time. You called my name.
Yeah, and you
and
weren't there.
It went to the sound of a phone off the hook. But that's no big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, no harm done. But in reference to that man that just was on, from an old coin collector's point of view, my favorite, and this is just for the looks of it, not so much the value, but my absolute favorite silver coin is the Ben Franklin half dollar from, I believe it's 46 to 63.
Okay, yeah.
It's just a beautiful coin.
Yeah.
Anyway, when you were in Cincinnati, what was your capacity? How did you make your living when you were in Cincinnati?
Well, at some point I didn't have to work. We'll just say that. But when I did, I did things like I ran Reds games, things like that. You know, worked for Charlie Murdoch. So what in particular are we discussing here?
Well, I thought that... Perhaps you, maybe I heard it wrong, that you worked for Billboard and it was in capacity?
Oh, well, I worked for Billboard as radio editor for 3 years, but even though Billboard was technically headquartered in Cincinnati, it wasn't physically there. It hadn't been for many decades. Interestingly enough, I think it was still printed there when I was first at Billboard, but nobody was there, not even the Littleford family that owned it at the time. It was still...
Okay, one more thing. When you were in Cincinnati, and I don't care what you did, yeah. But did you ever perchance have the chance to meet Steve Hoffman?
Well, everybody did because, you know, he was a publicity director for the Royals, and then he became a television radio critic for the Inquirer.
For the Inquirer. So, oh, my God.
The thing about him, he was, you know, like below 5 feet in height. I mean, if you met him, you knew it because he was like 4.5 feet tall.
Oh, and yeah. But you know what? That's kind of like one of the reasons I never met him. I would have really liked to have met him because he didn't gloat the fact that he was. He came out and say dwarfism. Yeah. But anyway, he never used that as a crutch, so to speak. No puns intended or anything. But I found out he had that condition. One time when he was on the Jerry Lewis telethon and they showed him, and I was just shocked. I couldn't believe he was just so talented. Oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely. He was. And, you know, he started out in the Inquirer, I think, on the police beat. He didn't start out in radio TV. It was, doing crime and stuff like that. And I think he worked for Jim Schottelcotti there. For a while, anyway.
So, that kind of sounds familiar.
Yeah.
All right, Raleigh, well, I'll let you go, and I appreciate everything you do. Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. So, 888-876-5593. My career was always the same. When I had enough money not to work, I didn't work until I had to work again. So, yeah, there's a lot of periods of time where, a lot of people, well, what happened during those years? I didn't have to work. Yeah. And I'm still kind of that way. Mike in Elmwood Park, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh, you know, I heard you guys talking about, you know, kids and everything for, like, radio stations. A friend of mine had a Zenith stereo that he was moving, and I'm not kidding you. You want to talk about sound. Oh, man.
Oh, the old tube units? The tube units?
Oh, yeah.
You betcha. So now when you say a stereo, was this a console?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and so it was your basic console that had the radio and the record player, and it looked like a piece of furniture, and it had speakers built in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah, I mean, it took three guys to take it down the stairs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. At least they didn't call it portable. You know, that transoceanic, I'll never forget it, especially when it was tubes. They always said it was portable because it had a handle. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it was barely luggable. You know, what are you saying portable? Yeah. This is not portable.
Oh, I know.
But, yeah, right, exactly. But, yeah, those Zenith consoles were lovely.
Oh, and, you know, he gave me extension speakers. They work. Everything works on it.
Right.
I have another one that was bought in 73 at Solid State. The ATX still works in it.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah, I mean...
you can see those occasionally for sale on eBay. And it's interesting. Don't think I haven't been tempted. But, yeah.
You know, and he was going to, he says, you know, like, if you don't want him, you're like, no, I'll take it.
Right. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
you know,
you'll take
and,
it.
You know, I took it. It's in my, you know, it's in my dining room. I play it now and then. My stereo upstairs, the radio still works. Everything works on it except the turntable. The turntable bit the dust years ago, but. The
ATX
works. The radio.
Yeah, that turntable. They. I'm trying to think of what they called it. They billed it as something. Oh, the circle of sound. The circle of sound from Zenith. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, that one was. That was from '73. And like I say, that one that I get downstairs. Oh man, when I put a Herb Alpert album on. Yeah. Oh, what a sound.
Yeah.
But I like the old stuff. I mean,
and then after the Circle of Sound, remember they had the Cobra-matic, the 4-speed turntable console, Cobra-matic. Yeah, had 16.
I moved from Chicago to Elmwood Park some years ago. My parents bought an Admiral TV, radio, and a turntable, and that had the one speaker. And this TV had provisions for color TV.
Yeah.
And I think they bought it they got married in 51. I think they bought it that year, the first year they got married. And, I mean, this thing was heavy. We had to literally slid it down the front stairs, the hallway, to get it down to the basement. That's how heavy it was.
Oh, sure.
But that was solid. I mean, not like now. You get everything is...
That
was solid.
And some of those Zeniths, like they had the floor models from the 1940s. Man, you'd get a hernia trying to move that across the room, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know. But I enjoy when you guys talk about, old radio stations and everything.
Yeah.
But,
fun memories.
No, your show makes my evening, believe me.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, it's always good to hear from you, and I hope you'll call me again soon.
Oh, I will.
Okay,
don't
worry. All right. So, 888-876-5593. We're going to do this, and then we're going to get to Johnny in Durham, I hope. And that'll be it for tonight. But there's tomorrow night, too, 3 big hours from 10 Central on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. John just asked me, came in and said, what's Melody Cedarstrom's website? DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. You got to write it all out. She's got a radio show, and you can hear it on various stations, some shortwave like WBCR or WBCQ, but also weekdays from Computing with me, I guess, from 10 to 11:30 at night on KCKN 1020, which is Roswell, and that's a beautiful 50,000 watts. So there it is. Also in the afternoons in Metairie on 600 AM. Yeah, that's right. New Orleans, WVOG. All right, so we've got Mike, and he is in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome to WGN Radio, Mike.
Is that me?
It is you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm Johnny in Durham.
Okay, Johnny. Well, very good. Hi, Johnny. How are you? What's going on in Durham?
Well, Durham remains Durham.
I remember it fondly.
Yeah, I could say things, but I won't.
Yeah, no. I worked at WDNC in downtown Durham.
Yes, yeah. The I could riff on some of these callers, but about the magic of radio, but I'll get you it was just a piece of trivia that I came across.
Yeah.
You remember Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.?
Of course.
Okay, his daddy was a famous violinist.
Right.
And his mother was this opera singer named Irma Gluck.
Right.
And she could hit double high C. That's all I've got. But I have a musical request.
Yeah. And I think, by the way, Alma Gluck, she was actually like Reba Fineson or something. She actually changed her name to Alma Gluck. And only reason I knew anything about this was I was apartment hunting years ago, many years ago, the 70s. Uh-huh. And I looked at this one place, and I looked at all the tenants there, and one of them was Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Oh, great.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So I didn't move there. Anyway, so what? Tell me what else.
Musical requests as we go out, but it's probably too late.
Well, there's always tomorrow night. What is it?
It is. It's Bob Dylan doing a cover song of an old song. And it's called 90 Miles an Hour Down a Dead End Street.
Okay.
And that's the request musical.
All right. I will do that. I will write that down and actually keep this and get it on tomorrow night.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Glad you called, Johnny. Love. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Bye. Yeah, I had fun in Durham, and did middays there. And it's Duke had this big diet at the time, and it brought people from all over the country to have this diet. And I guess it worked. I don't know. We had the receptionist of the radio station actually had her jaws wired shut so she wouldn't eat. So maybe it didn't work so well. But whatever it was this thing. And so I opened my show every day with Baby Elephant Walk because they used to kind of, I guess, I won't say trot, but jog around the square downtown Durham. So I always thought Baby Elephant Walk was just so appropriate. And, you know, no one ever called me on it. They never ever figured out why I did that. But it was fun. We had a lot of fun there. All right. So 888-876-5593. The waning moments. We've got 2 minutes. And let me see if there's something else I needed to tell you. Yeah, it was like I was saying earlier. Hank Thompson turned 101, or would have turned 101 today, sadly. Died about 19 years ago right now. But I will, maybe I'll play something tomorrow night because I enjoy that. In 1957, Time magazine was reporting on four young singers being groomed for stardom. Who were they? Well, two of them you've never heard of, Milton Allen and Janis Martin. I'll have to look them up. But the other two, Johnny Mathis and Connie Francis. Yeah. It was also on this date in 1959 that Art LeBeau created the first rock and roll compilation album. Arguably, I've had this discussion with a lot of people, but what is not arguable is he did come up with the term oldies but goodies. And yes, on his own record label, Original Sound, the first one of the series was Oldies But Goodies in Hi-Fi. Yeah, and it was good. But right around then, first time anybody was coming up with those compilations. Morris Levy was early in that game as well. And most of the labels within a couple of years were doing it. Liberty had a nice series, and on vinyl, it never saw the light of day anywhere else. Mercury had a nice series too. But the Oldies But Goodies compilations were just truly wonderful. And it was on this date in 59. All right. Well, that's historic. So on that note, we thank Adam, by the way, for keeping us on the air. Couldn't do it without him. And John for screening your calls. And couldn't do it without him either. That's for darn sure. Me, I just kind of sit here and try to remember I'm on the radio. And I get to talk to you for 3 hours, like I will again tomorrow night if you call. So until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.
Mo and Behold, plus Jet Blue Streak and Bizarro Bedroom Bandit. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. Lawn and Disorder. In Alaska, a cabin owner comes home after a year away to find his remote retreat raided, ransacked, and relieved of property. But this bizarre backwoods burglar apparently wasn't finished because somebody also meticulously mowed the man's lawn. Alaska state troopers tracked down a suspect and slapped on the cuffs, breaking, entering, and landscaping. At least somebody finally found a crook willing to finish the yard work. Fly like a weasel. This is your captain shrieking. Normally, it's the passengers flight attendants have to contend with. This time, it's the pilot. The skipper get a gripper on a United flight grabbed the PA mic instead of the intercom and supposedly started cursing out the cabin staff from the cockpit, clueless that 250 passengers heard the whole 7-minute rant. Scum Fly With Me reportedly did not address his Bile High Club moment with the passengers as they landed. Bed burglary and beyond. In Bangor, Maine, a weary worker wanders home only to find a freeloading female 40 winking in his freaking bed. Cops cuffed the snoozing squatter, then connected her to another building burglary where she allegedly swiped some stuff and deposited a doo-doo door prize. Burglary, theft, and mischief charges followed. Next time, lady, try leaving a mint on the pillow. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.